Before we begin, I want to touch on the one beauty product I've been investing in for years, VitaGlow. VitaGlow's ingestible marine collagen has been my go-to supplement for plumper skin and healthier hair and nails ever since Bea introduced it to me.
That's right. VitaGlow's marine collagen powder is made with activated collagen peptides to stimulate natural collagen production. It's a product I've turned to again after experiencing postnatal hair loss, and the results speak for themselves.
Babe, I practically guzzled the stuff before my wedding.
I remember. Great news. Our friends at VitaGlow have shared a discount code for you. Simply enter the code VGPeaches at checkout for 20% off.
There was a lot of shame around it. You know, why did my marriage not work? Yeah, why did you feel like a failure? What does one do when they get divorced? Like, I did a lot of drugs.
Yes!
I had a lot of sex.
You're listening to the Peaches Podcast, a show by Tori Clapham and myself, Beck Chidiak. This is not a show about fitness.
This is a collection of stories and conversations with some of the most inspiring people we know. This is the Peaches Podcast. Welcome back to the Peaches Podcast. This episode, we're talking about something that affects 30% of marriages in Australia. Divorce. Cassie Maynard thought she'd found the one when she met her ex while working overseas. She was almost 30 and feeling ready to settle down. But, like many relationships, things didn't go to plan. Her marriage ended after 2 years and she was faced with the overwhelming feat of starting again. How does divorce work, legally, once you've emotionally made the decision as a couple? Who stays in the shared home? And who gets custody over shared friendships? What can heal a broken heart? And does some good old-fashioned soul-searching, partying, travel, fun, and casual sex help you to figure out who you truly are? Here's Cassie's story. That's right. Cass Dog, hey girl!
Hey, so nice to see your beautiful faces.
You too, babe. I wish we were in person, but of course you are up in sunny Byron Bay enjoying your best life.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good here. I am missing you girls though. I haven't seen you in a very long time in person, but yeah, here we are. I'm enjoying the good life up here with all the crystals and talking to my plants and, you know, doing all the cliche things.
So Byron of you.
So Byron. Babe, I was thinking this morning as I drove into the office about our friendship and how much, like, you have evolved, and I have too, we all have, but, like, how much you've evolved in, like, the 5 or 6 years that I've known you. And I'm so grateful to you for talking to us today. And I think we'll just get straight into it. We're going to be unpacking your divorce. Beck and I both have some friends in our lives who are potentially going to be going down the road that you went down. So I think that this will be a really
big topic.
Yeah.
And thank you, because it's really brave and courageous of you to share your story, especially it being at the age bracket that you're within, because you, it's kind of like that's the start of relationships, the start of marriages, and you've already been through it once. So
that's it.
Yeah, yeah, it's big. And I haven't spoke about it publicly before. I've obviously had private conversations with people and people that need guidance and help, but yeah, I think it's nice to be able to share something that I wish I had heard at the time I was going through what I was going through.
Well, that's it, right? And here you are, like, sitting in front of us. You're a new mom. You have an incredible new partner. And really, statistics show, whether we like it or not, that, like, half of our friends that we know who are in committed relationships currently may well not be within a year, 2 years, 10 years. So let's get straight into it, girl. Do you want to tell me a little bit about how you met your ex and how your relationship progressed?
Yeah, sure. So we just met through a mutual friend, and He slid into my Facebook DM after that, and we were communicating from afar. He was overseas living in Singapore and I was in Australia, and he was coming home for a trip. We went to dinner, and that was our first proper meeting in person where we could have a conversation.
Can I, and I remember stop you having, just for a second?
Yes.
Can you tell us how old you were? And can you let us know when you first met at the party, like, was the attraction instant, or was when he messaged you, were you like, why the fuck is this guy contacting me?
Yeah, it was, I think it was 28 or 29. I can't remember. I'm sorry. but I was about to, you know, get into that 30 bracket, and I don't remember it being instant. I remember being like, oh yeah, he's cute, but I didn't really think of it again. And then when he slid in, it felt like the conversation flowed and it was nice, and I did want to meet him. I can't remember being like, oh my gosh, this is it, I'm gonna be with this guy, or anything like that. But when we did have our meeting in person, I went into the toilet and messaged my flatmate at the time and wrote her some message like, you know, if I don't marry this guy, there's something wrong. He ticks all the boxes. So I was super excited. Like, I thought he was the bee's knees. As you do, you know, a relationship, it's beautiful. It's, you're getting to know them. You see all the best sides of that person. You don't really dive deep into the other stuff until later down the track. And we went through a lot in our relationship. A lot. And there's a few things I won't share just because it's quite personal to him. And I think out of respect, I don't want to share that. But he did go through a few big things that really shifted the dynamic in our relationship, where it would have made him feel like he couldn't be that masculine, you know, safety and support for me, which for a guy's ego is big. And if they're not working, I guess, with how to maneuver or work with that masculine energy, it can lead to a very toxic way of being. And that's kind of what happened, as well as I changed careers. So I moved into the fitness world after working in sales for over 10 years. So that was huge as well, because my whole identity was shifting and becoming more aligned with my true self. And I think we both just went through some really big experiences but didn't know how to handle it, I guess.
And to be a couple with your new identities, maybe.
Within that, exactly. There was just a lot of growth that we needed to do individually. I mean, maybe we could have done it together, but it was a lot. It was a lot to carry. And yeah, I think by the time we did get married, there was a few things that were like, fuck, shit, but, you know.
So you're talking in the lead up to your wedding day, you're thinking, oh, fuck.
Well, there was just, you know, a few things that I'm like, at the time I didn't know they were red flags. Like, now, after all the growth and everything I've gone through, I could recognize something, but.
Did they just kind of feel like cold feet, a little bit nervous?
Yeah, just little things were like, oh, no, that's I don't like that. But I think I wasn't confident in myself to stand up for what I believed in, or, you know, what I thought was right or wrong, what my truth was. I kind of went along with things, you know, a little bit too long.
And Cass, how long were you guys together before you got engaged or married? So what was the...
I think it was about a year and a half.
Yeah, and then from a year and a half of getting engaged, from getting engaged to married, what was that time gap?
I think that was about a year or just under, and then we were married for 2.5 years.
Okay.
And yeah. Taking a step back to you talking about your dynamic and sort of touching on that sort of traditionally masculine role of being the carer and not necessarily wanting to be vulnerable with your partner. You touched on the fact that you think that that's what really was at the core of your breakup, was it something that was already going on when you got engaged, or was it something that happened after you're engaged? So there was part of you that was like, I'm already committed and it's kind of unraveling in front of my eyes.
Yeah, it happened with like when we were engaged. So right. Before getting married, so it was happening. And then I think just once we got married, it felt like it all just went, whoo, it just felt bigger. And it was just really toxic. Our relationship turned really toxic. And I had a lot of friends say to me after we split up that my light was off. You know, this is at the end. This is not necessarily when we first got married, but getting deeper into our marriage. And I look back and I'm like, it's so true. I couldn't do anything right. I couldn't speak up. It just felt like everything I did was wrong, you know, and that just made me really doubt myself and feel, and it's the wound I've had for my whole entire life is not feeling good enough. So what that relationship did was really highlight that wound that needed to be healed.
Going back to, it was really. We just had a little internet blip there. Going back to when, like your wedding day, I've had some friends get married, and on the day of their wedding, they've had like their best friends or their parents say to them, like, is this what you want? Because we can still, like, you don't have to do this. Was there any part of you on your wedding day that was like, just in the back of your head, like, is this isn't right? Or were you kind of really caught up with the love and the romance and also just like the fucking image of a big party in a beautiful white dress and all of that?
I think I was definitely caught up in it all, and it was a big fucking wedding. Like, we were in Bali, 70 people. It was extravagant. We got married at the same place that Jennifer Hawkins got married. Like, we had a wedding planner. Wow.
So you weren't going to walk down that aisle.
No, it was a big, amazing party. It was great, and we really did have fun. After we got married, we went back to the reception room, you know, that moment where it's like, romance me. That was like where I was like, this just feels flat. Like, let's go back to the party.
Right. So you're like great when you're around your friends and you're, you know, performing, but when it's just the two of you, that's when, like, yeah, I think there's a lot of couples like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a big moment of shit. But, you know, and then you're married, went to a honeymoon, we did all the things. And
how was the honeymoon?
I remember being fun. We stayed in Bali and went to Thailand, and yeah.
No big issues there?
Not that I really remember. But, you know, at these times I feel like maybe I have blocked some of it out as well, because yeah, there's a lot of heaviness. There was a lot of pain and hurt that I experienced during that time, and not physical pain, but a lot of emotional pain. So I think there are moments that I have blocked out, and maybe there were some during that time.
Well, it's kind of like what the straw that broke the camel's back, isn't it? Like, there's a million little moments that can lead up to a relationship breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But was there a moment in time that you look back on now where it dawned on you that it just wasn't going to work and that you might need to remove yourself from the relationship?
Yeah, I received a text message from a friend that was living overseas, and the text message was about something that he had done, and I was shocked. And I said to her, why have you not told me this? Because she said, I've been meaning he, it's happened before as well, but I didn't want to let you know because I didn't want it to ruin our friendship. I was like, fuck, are you serious? Of course I need to know this. So that was a moment where I was just furious. I was upset. I was all the things. But I was also scared. I was scared of being on my own. I was scared of leaving. I was scared of starting again. Like, how could I possibly do anything alone?
It sounds like in or over the span of the relationship that you slowly became quite codependent and lost a lot of your confidence, which can happen.
Yeah, so much of it. Yeah.
Cass, how far into the marriage did you get this text message from a friend?
It was pretty close to the end.
Yeah.
We might have tried for another 6 months or something after I received this. Yeah.
Did you confront him?
Oh, yeah, as soon as I received it. Yeah, I remember the day.
Oh, I wish everyone could see the fire in your eyes when you just said, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can remember that feeling.
As well. His mum was staying with us. So, yeah, it was like, it was big.
You're obviously wanting to retain some privacy around what happened, which is fine. Did he admit to what he had done and all of that? Like, he didn't try to pretend?
No, he didn't admit. I think that was the whole thing. I think he was just trying to protect himself, and whether who knows? Like, but didn't really admit to anything.
Wow. Cass, can you talk us through how the conversations start to begin when you realize that this relationship doesn't have legs, and that it's time to remove yourself from the relationship? How do the conversations start to roll out? What's going through your mind? Are you talking to yourself in the shower, having those conversations, like prepping yourself? Is there a conversation, like the conversation, or are they little conversations along the way for you guys? Where does this unravel?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of writing things down. I remember having a pros and cons list. yeah, a lot of writing down, a lot of thinking, a lot of just removing myself from everyone and really becoming recluse to try and work this out. And there were little conversations that would turn into big fights. And that just really confirmed things for me that if we're not going to be able to work through this together, and I'm definitely not blaming him, and I've accepted that what happened, like what he was going through was something that he hadn't healed and worked on. What I was going through was the same. So together we were just fueling this fucking toxic fire. And we didn't know how to solve that together. And I was seeing a counsellor, and I asked him to come and see the counsellor, and he just didn't want to go down that path. He didn't want to talk. He didn't want to work on it like that. And, again, for me that was like, well, what other options do we have?
Was he willing to admit that you guys were having problems, or was he trying to be like, there's nothing wrong, like, why are you making drama when there isn't any drama?
No, he definitely knew there was something going wrong, like that there were things going wrong, but I think he thought that we would just move on, you know, we'd just keep trying. But I just couldn't. There was just something inside me. I can't even describe the feeling. It was just, actually, if I close my eyes now, it's like just like this little girl like kicking and screaming, trying to come out. Like I just couldn't stay. And when I started to talk about this with friends and family, I didn't get much support. I remember one of my friends said to me, "Oh, you can't leave. Like, you're going to leave?" Like, I'm going to fucking leave. Like, of course, when you've got your friends and family not really being supportive in that way, you doubt yourself again, you know? Mm. It's like that constant, oh, fuck, is there something, is this me? Like, is this all me? Should I be leaving? Am I giving up too early? Am I, all the things, it's only been 2.5 years, all this shit going through your head. But, yeah, I just couldn't. I had one, I basically said to him, I'm going to go and stay with a friend for a weekend. And I sat there for an entire weekend. I think she might have been away and I just stayed in the house and I just spent that time like just with me, like no conversations. This is just me and me. I've got to work this out myself. No one can tell me what to do. This is my big, like, it's the biggest decision I'll probably ever make in my life, but it's all on me. And that was the weekend where I went back and said, that's it. I'm moving out. I was moving in with my friend. She had a spare room, which I was very, very lucky and grateful for her friendship. We had a massive fight and
he tried to stop.
He said, I want the rings back. I was like, fine. Left them on the bench. And I left. And after that, I also went to visit my sister in Newcastle, and this is where I really started to dive into my spiritual body. And I was working, well, I was reading Gabby Bernstein, yeah, am I saying that correctly? Books about, you know, the universe has your back and all of this stuff. So I was starting to dive into this realm. And I remember driving to Newcastle and I was like, please give me a sign that I'm doing the right thing. Like, I just need a sign from the universe. And I had like this flock of butterflies just fly into my windscreen. The white butterfly was my spiritual guide at that time. And it was just the biggest sigh of relief, confirmation, like, this is it. Like, I am doing the right thing. Thank fuck. The universe has my back. And yeah, that was, and then the process began. Like, it's not an easy process. And he was in denial and I had to, my dad had to get involved when it came to the financial side of things. And it became really messy and yucky. Because he just didn't want to accept it. And I'd been toying with this for a while. Like, this was not just,
do you think he thought that you were trying to make a dramatic exit and we're going to come back? And
I think he thought that we could work it out, and he just, it was kind of a kick up the bum, and I was just expressing how I felt to change things. But for me, it was the end. And for him, it was only the beginning of the end, right. If that makes sense.
So from a logistical point of view, how does one initiate a divorce?
Oh, God.
Sounds like a fucking pain in the ass, babe.
It is, and that's why I guess a lot of people do stay, because it's much easier to stay when you've got, you're living in a tight place together, you've got your furniture together. Didn't have a lot of money or finances or that together. We had bought a car together, but we were lucky in that sense that we didn't have a lot. We didn't have kids. So I understand it gets more complicated and harder the deeper and longer you're in a relationship. But I was going to stay in the place. He'd said, you stay, I'll leave you everything. This is at the beginning.
It's always at the beginning, Cass. It's always at the beginning.
So I stayed in the property we're in. He moved out. But, you know, when it, just stupid, petty things, like the furniture, when he was going to take some of the furniture, it, Oh, it was just, there was just so much fury between, you know, whose is what. And
because, like, you have to write down each piece of furniture, yeah. I remember when my parents did it.
We didn't go that far. He had said to me, you keep this, you keep that. Like, he was really nice. But then it was like, oh, but I gave you that, you know. Like, it starts to get
resentment.
That anger builds, exactly, the resentment. Resentment arrives. So that's why my dad got involved, just to help with, just to be the middleman to help things out. So I filled out the divorce papers eventually. I got around to doing that and I fucked them up. So I didn't get it signed by a JP or something. So I gave them to him. I got a friend to deliver them to him and they weren't correct. So we couldn't upload them. So then, of course, I'm like, why is this happening? Like, is this meant to happen? Am I doing, you know, back to the doubt? Like,
is this a sign from my butterfly angel?
Where are you?
Where are the butterflies today?
So we had to get someone, a lawyer, to go through that process because it just became too, I didn't really know what I was doing. So it was just easier to pay someone to handle it all. So it was done. They delivered the papers. I didn't have to get a friend. Didn't have to, because you can't serve them yourself. You have to get someone else to do it, whatever. So it's just much easier to get that help, recruit some help, just to take the pressure off and that extra thing you have to worry about off. So eventually they were signed and uploaded and it was all done and dusted.
So when you say uploaded, do you literally like upload them to the internet and that means it's official? What do you mean?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you got to put it all, I'm pretty sure it's online or maybe it is papers that they do. Anyway, it had to.
You send them away.
You have to send them away. Send them away to the divorce people for them to sign and seal it that it's done, over.
And what does one do when it is done, officially done and legally done and over? Does one, like, firstly, how do you feel? And secondly, what do you do?
Look, it was a massive relief for me. It felt like this big weight lifted off my shoulders at that time, especially when I moved out of the property we were in together. That was another milestone of like, another thing I'm cutting. And it took time to cut a lot of things. The only thing that I have now is the car that we own together, which we are going to sell soon. So it's like one last thing that's still there. So it feels like you're just constantly cutting these little
pieces of your past.
Connections.
And then
there's
the dividing of physical assets. But talk to me about the dividing of like emotional assets, aka friends and stuff like that. Like, how did that work?
That was awful. I lost everyone. I lost all the, well, he's, you know, the mutual friends that we had on his side were gone. His family didn't contact me. Like, it was just, it was awful. It was like I was fully starting all over again. But in saying that, at the time it felt awful, but I think it was just like that fresh start I needed. I didn't want to be talking about him or him turning up or, you know, those moments that you could have if you've got those mutual friends. But it's very tough. You feel alone. You feel like there was a lot of shame around it. You know, why did my marriage not work? Why did you feel like a failure? And you see all these happy marriages around you and people getting engaged and married and having babies and buying houses and everything that I thought I wanted at that time, as I said. But yeah, I realized I wasn't actually ready for how it was going. I needed to explore more of myself. I needed to, there was a lot more growth that I had to go through before I was moving into that phase of my life. And I'm turning 39 tomorrow, so I ain't young anymore.
But oh, yes,
I had a baby 5 months ago, so I had a bubba later in life, which I'm very happy for. It's yeah, I feel like I was ready, you know, and I'm really enjoying motherhood now because I worked on myself and I got to experience so much. And Becky did ask that question, what does one do when they get divorced? Like, I did a lot of drugs.
Yes!
I had a lot of sex.
I'm so glad you said this.
But, like, I mean, self-medicating, you know?
Yeah, it was needed at the time. It was needed. And then I had so much fun. I traveled overseas on my own. You know, I mean, on my own, I had friends there, but I didn't have a partner with me for the first time ever going overseas. So I went to the US. I went to Coachella. I did all that fun shit.
Things that you need to do before you become a mummy, that's for sure.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I have no regrets. I definitely partied harder than I've ever partied in my life in that kind of phase in my early 30s or mid 30s. Yeah.
I think there's definitely people who party super hard are often sort of running away from a little bit of trauma. I think we can all say that.
But hey, at least doing it in your mid 30s, you've got a little bit more cash behind you to do it.
Yeah, well, kinda. I did just start out in the fitness industry, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But at that time, my priorities were getting Botox, partying, and traveling overseas. So,
all the things that do make you feel better at the time.
Shifted all that time. That's what I spent my money on.
I just want to take a step back to, the internet, to talking about the shame that you felt around your divorce. Mm. I think that there is a lot of stigma attached to divorce, yet not a breakup. It's really interesting. Mm. And often the shorter the relationship, the more stigma there is. But really, if you were to look at it, like, isn't it a good thing that these two people realized before they had children, before they owned a house, all of that stuff, that it wasn't going to work? I find it really, what's your take on all of that?
Oh, yeah, I so agree. It was, and I think it was my conditioning as well. Like, my parents would have been together 50 years this year. They had three kids. My brother with the same woman he has been with since he was 17, three kids together. My sister married, three kids. You know, like, they've been in their relationships for so long. And for me, it was like, I got married, got divorced before I even bought a house or had a baby. Or it just felt really, I just felt silly. I felt really silly. Yeah. And then society, as I said, like, I had those friends that kind of made comments around, why would you leave? You know, you've got to stay, you've got to work it out. Like, well,
I definitely.
Sometimes you can't work it out, and it's not like we didn't try. We fucking tried, but we just.
It's quit. That age bracket as well. Like, you know, you're in your 30s and you get married. It's like, I feel like divorces feels a little bit more not acceptable, but there's less stigma about it as, you know, you get older, because it's like you've put in the work, you've really tried, and you know, the kids have grown up and. The love has burnt, like, the fire has died, and then it's just time to move on. But I feel like there is a little bit more like, oh my God, they're getting divorced. They've only been together for 2.5 years. Like, she's already divorced in her 30s. Like, it's less kind of spoken about, and there's more, I suppose, Hollywood kind of drama behind it than there is just two 50-year-olds getting divorced because they're over each other type of thing.
I think that often it says more about the person who's encouraging you to stay than it does about you, because, I mean, I just think it's a real shame to give up some of the best years of your life and to settle in something that you're truly not happy with for the sake of getting the kids into primary school, getting the kids through high school. Like, you count too. And I just think, like, resigning to an unhappy relationship is such a shitty way to spend a life that could be very fucking short. So props to you, babe, for for having the balls to do it, because there's a hell of a lot of people out there who are in a very similar situation, you know, that you were in, and they might be listening to this podcast right now and trying to find the strength to decide what's next. And on that, we would love to know, like, if I came to you tomorrow, or a good friend came to you tomorrow and said, I don't think I want to be in my marriage anymore, like, what would your biggest piece of takeaway advice be? You can have more than one as well, if you want.
Yeah, I feel like you've got to go down that self-explore, like, why is that? What is it you want? Like, really exploring yourself and tuning into what you really want, and not what society wants, or your parents want, or your friends want, or what your partner wants. Like, what the fuck do you want? Like, and that's something that we miss a lot, because we're trying to keep up with what we think we should be doing. So I think it's really about turning inwards and taking that time. And if you need to recruit help to do that, talking to someone, doing some healing sessions. Yeah, just connecting to self, slowing down and stop looking outside for approval. And once you have found, like, I think the answer is inside you. You know, you don't need to be asking people. It's always inside you. It's just a matter of you finding space to find the answers that you're looking for. So I guess that would be my biggest piece, and that's what I spent a lot of time doing. I spent far too much time in my head, though. I think it's getting in touch, you know, it's in your heart, it's in your body, it's your soul, you know, your womb has so much wisdom, and, you know, get out of the head as much as you can, get into your body and just connect to your truth. And if that truth doesn't fit in with what makes others happy, then fuck the others, find other friends, or, you know, and it's just the way it is. If you're going to be living a life of truth, you've got to be prepared to lose things as well, whether that's a partner or certain friends that don't fit in with what you believe or how you want to live your life, and that's just the way it goes.
It's really beautiful advice, and I think actually people could apply that sentiment to so many different
avenues.
Many different forks in the road. Well, Cass, I feel like we've touched on chapter one, but there's so much more that we would love to talk to you about. So I think what we're going to do is have a part two, which will start right now. And any listeners, you'll just have to tune in next week. Guys, we had so much to talk about with Cass that we decided she'd need another episode to cover what happened next for her after divorce. Join us next week to learn more about Cassie's E-cup breast implant removal, as well as what life brought her after starting again. The loss of loved ones, finding her new partner, and becoming a mum. Chat soon.